Our first case this morning is Yvonne Cruz versus Dennis McDonough, case 2021 through 2030. Mr. Carpenter, you're reserving, I understand, 5 minutes of time for rebuttal.
That's correct.
All right, sir, you may proceed.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Please, the court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Mrs. Hughes. Mrs. Hughes' appeal presents an issue of first impression regarding the interpretation of 38 U.S.C. 5121 capital A. This case turns on the question of whether or not to qualify as a substituted claimant under 5121A, you are or are not filing a derivative claim under the previous version of the statute, 5121A, which limited the ability of a survivor to proceed. When Congress enacted 5121A, they created a separate path for claimants whose claims previously died when they died to have their claim completed or their appeal. In this case, Mrs. Hughes made application to the VA to be substituted in her husband's claim that was within the appeal period for the filing of a notice of disagreement on a grant of a total rating or a 100% rating for his service-connected schizophrenia.
Why is it that we should not find that Ms. Cruz's Q allegation is not a new claim?
Because
I mean,
to begin with,
right? There was not a Q claim pending when she substituted.
No, Your Honor. She substituted to complete Mr. Cruz's appeal. And she stepped into his shoes and had every right that Mr. Cruz had. And Mr. Cruz would have had the right to challenge the effective date assigned based upon a previous clear and unmistakable error.
He never did do that before he passed away.
That's right. But he had...
When he passed away, there was no Q claim pending.
No, Your Honor. But what was pending was the question of whether or not the effective date assigned was correct.
And she was allowed to step into that appeal, right?
Yes.
And challenge. And was this? It was an appeal. I'm a little fuzzy on the details, but there was. It was a like 2009, 2010 board decision that granted them 100%.
Yes.
But it only allowed the effective date to be, was it 2009?
2009.
And that was what she stepped in to appeal and say it should be earlier than 2009.
That's correct.
So she was allowed to carry that appeal out.
Yes, she was.
But she wants to make a new argument that. And this is where I'm a little confused. She's not arguing that the 2010 decision is subject to Q, is
no,
she?
Because no.
That's still live. It's not a final decision. So you wouldn't. She's
that's
arguing
right.
That the 1961, is it 61?
I believe it's 1960. Your
1960
Honor. The effective date was 1961.
Okay, it was subject reduction. To, was yeah. Contained Q.
Yes.
But that wasn't part of the appeal of the 2010 decision, was it?
I believe it was, Your Honor, because Q has been accepted. Number one, Q is not a claim. Q is a procedural device, and that procedural device can be used to establish that a claim has been, the finality of that claim has been undone.
Well, I get your argument on that point, but the problem I'm still having is the proceeding that was still live, which allowed her to sub in,
yes.
Was a challenge to the 2010 board decision. It wasn't a challenge to the 1961 decision.
No,
or
no.
1960 decision.
But if Mr. Cruz had been alive, Mr. Cruz would have been able to assert Q on his own behalf.
Wouldn't he have had to file a separate claim of Q with the RO?
No, Your Honor.
Are you sure?
I am absolutely certain. I have done it hundreds of times myself and have been, that Q claim has been accepted and has been adjudicated.
You would have to file the Q claim. Like, if you're going from, first of all, was the decision, the 1960 decision, it's just an RO decision, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, Your Honor.
Right, so you would have had, on an appeal from the 2010 board decision, you can't, or the 2010 RO decision, when you go to the board, you can't tell the board that the 2010 decision is...
No, you have to tell
the
regional
office.
You have to go to the regional office. And that's what she did.
That's a new claim.
No, Your Honor. It is part of her notice of disagreement with the effective date assigned based upon an allegation that there was a clear and unmistakable error in the 1960 decision, which unlawfully reduced his previously assigned 100% rating for his schizophrenia to 70%.
Do you have a case in the notion that you can, as part of an ongoing appeal to a later board decision, that you can raise Q as an alternative legal theory for why that decision is not final? This sounds like it runs up against Rusick.
Well, it can't run up against Rusick, Your Honor, because Rusick was a decision that was based upon 5121 small a. And the language in Rusick, contrary to the way in which it was quoted in the court's decision, was that even if 5121, because Mr. Rusick passed away, Mrs. Rusick brought a Q claim that is allowed by VA regulation to establish her entitlement to DIC. So when she makes her claim for DIC, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, I'm just trying to think this through. So you're not, let me make sure you're not going as far as I think you might be going. You're not saying, because there's always potential Q claims out there to challenge incorrect decisions, even if they're final, and that there's no time period to file them, so they're technically still alive, that a survivor can come in at any stage, because the veteran could come at any stage and file a Q claim.
Well, to the extent
that... Okay, let me ask you this hypothetical. Let me just, because sure. That may have been a little unclear.
Okay.
Let's say all this had become final, he'd lost all this, and he passed away, he hadn't filed a Q claim at all, there was no case pending whatsoever.
Absolutely.
Do you think she can come in and say, well, because my husband could have filed a Q claim on effective date to the 60 decision, I still can do it?
No, Your Honor.
So you're just saying that you can use Q as an alternative grounds for an earlier effective date, even if that had never been raised by the veteran
during
his appeal
life
to the RO. But I'm still having a little trouble with that, because he would have had to raise it to the RO.
Right, and that's where I was trying to go, Your Honor. In the notice of disagreement, that's where the allegation of clear and unmistakable error was made. And the regional office initially rejected it, and we eventually had to get them to be compelled by the Veterans Court to accept her as a substituted appellant. And then the regional office itself adjudicated the question of clear and unmistakable error. They made a decision that there was no clear and unmistakable error. At that point in time, Mrs. Crew...
Okay, I understand what you're saying, but can we back up just one second? The notice of disagreement was to the 2010 RO decision.
On the effective date assigned. And that was initially rejected because Mr. Cruz had died before the 1 year. And
I get that. They were wrong on that. They had to accept that.
Right.
That makes perfectly sense. But the decision from the RO, he had never raised any argument whatsoever that the 1960 decision contained Q.
He had not. No, Your Honor. No. And we're not making any assertion that he is. The question is...
And so how is she subbing in to finish processing of a claim that he has never raised?
Because part and parcel of any claim is the effective date assigned. It's one of the basic elements of a claim. The effective date assigned was incorrect as a matter of law because there was a pending claim before that can be established by a clear and unmistakable error in an unlawful reduction.
It sounds to me like you're asking us to establish a new rule that is based on the provenance of a claim that's brought by a substitute.
No, Your Honor.
As long as that claim can be traced back to something that was pending or to an earlier dispute, then in your argument, that's enough. But that's not what the statute says, does it?
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. That's exactly what the statute says. The statute that was created by Congress that allowed for substitution said that a veteran's claim would no longer die and that the substituted claimant would be able to come in and complete either a claim pending or an appeal.
To complete pending claims.
That's correct. And part of the pending claim here...
The question here is whether the claim that she brought was pending or not. And you're saying, well, it was pending because I can trace it back to an earlier date, whereas...
But Your Honor,
let me ask you this question. Is a Q claim a standalone claim with its own set of legal requirements and factual considerations?
The Veterans Court has held that there is no such thing as a Q claim. There is no independent Q claim. It is a procedural device to determine whether or not there was a previous error made that would render a previous decision non-final and allow for the previously pending claim
and
to be part...
And to show that, to succeed on a Q claim, you have to satisfy certain legal requirements.
That's correct. But that is not a claim. A claim is...
So you do have to identify the decision that contains the error.
Which is what we...
Point out the clear... Yeah, but you're allowed to carry on his claim. And his claim was filed in 2009, right?
Correct.
And what was the content of that claim? It was, here's new evidence... Was it a new material evidence claim?
No, he claimed that he was entitled to a total rating rather than the 70%
okay.
rating assigned for his schizophrenia.
Right, so he asked for an increase. He filed evidence for the increase.
And they found that there was a basis for the assignment of a 100% rating.
But he didn't ask for an earlier effective date for either a 70% or a 100%.
But with all due respect, John, he couldn't have done that. You can't ask for an increase claim while at the same time asking for an earlier effective date for something that hasn't happened. It is only when the VA agrees that he's entitled to the 100% rating that he is entitled to raise the issue of the final element of a claim, which is the effective date. And the effective date...
I'm not sure I understand. Had he been getting 70% all the way back to 1960?
He had been assigned a 70% rating. It was reduced from 100% to 70 and had remained at 70. He actually had a combined 90 because he had other service-connected disabilities.
Mr. Carpenter, you're into your rebuttal time.
I see that, Your Honor.
You want to
can I finish
the rest and you can
my answer to Judge Hughes? No? Okay.
I think Judge Mayer may have a question. No? Okay. Okay. Let's hear from Counselor Coney.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Because Mrs. Cruz first raised the Q claim on appeal after her husband died, she cannot substitute on that claim, and so the Veterans Court decision here should be affirmed. The plain language of 5121A...
Counselor, it seems to me that the statute says that you cannot bring the substitute cannot bring a new claim. But your friend on the other side says that a Q claim is not a claim. What's your response to that argument?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think Andre versus Principi really settles this case. Based on the language of the Q statute and the Q regulation, this court in Andre stated that each specific allegation of Q is a separate and distinct claim. That was the language that the court used in that case, and it was based on both the language of 5109A and the regulation at issue that states that each Q claim needs to be pled with specificity, and so each Q claim is a separate and distinct claim. And that case has been cited numerous times in the Veterans Court and in this court, and I think this court's decision in RISC really highlights that in this context, there has to be a pending Q claim, or there has to be a pending claim for the veteran to substitute into, for the veteran's spouse to substitute into.
I'm still a little confused. What decision is he saying contained Q, and what is the Q that he's claiming, she's claiming?
As I understand it, the Q claim is as to the 1960 rating decision.
What did the 1960 rating decision, is that the one that reduced it from 100 to 70%?
That's correct, Your Honor, yes.
So there's nothing from 1960 until 2009 or 2010 that would have barred the veteran from raising Q as to that decision.
Correct, Your Honor.
So he could have, in the 2009, I take it, is he submitted evidence saying, this should be increased back to 100%.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that the appellant's counsel here...
He could have, at the same time, said, and you should never reduce it at all.
Correct.
If he had done that, if the veteran had said, here's new evidence, and also there's Q in the 1960 decision, you know, you should give me retroactive 100% all the way back, not just based upon this new evidence, then when she subbed in, she could raise that Q claim, right?
Correct. So that would have been a slightly different Q claim than the Q claim that she did raise, because it would have been a Q claim for 100% rating versus a 70% rating rather than this one, which was asking for an earlier effective date, which still argues that there's Q in the 1960 rating decision. But the appellant's counsel here relies on there being this one-year appeal period, and that period is essentially irrelevant to the Q claim because it can be raised at any time. A Q claim is not bound to the one-year decision in which, or the one-year appeal period in which they would have had to file a notice of disagreement.
Your friend's argument is that because the veteran got an earlier effective date with the 2010 RO decision in 2010?
I believe it was.
Or a board, let's just say 2010, yeah. So I don't get caught up into which one it is. The 2010 decision, that he still had a year from that time, the veteran still had a year from that time to file a notice of a disagreement. He died before he could do that, and so his widow was allowed to step in and file an appeal from anything he could have. And it seems to me that the argument is that part of that appeal could have included the effective date is wrong because this earlier decision contains Q. And is your view that you can't do that as a basis for why the effective date in the 2010 decision is incorrect?
Your Honor,
because he clearly could have said, I filed this claim, that the effective date you gave me is wrong. And she could carry on that, right?
Yes, Your Honor. If the notice of disagreement that Mrs. Cruz had filed on behalf of her husband did not contain Q, we wouldn't be here. A substitute party is allowed to process the original claim to completion. The problem here comes when what she files is actually not just a notice of disagreement with the 2010 decision, but actually a Q claim as to the 1960 decision. That's where the problem comes in. Q has been described as a rare and specific type of error. We have an entire body of case law specifically on how Q is different from other claims.
Is your point that what we have to look at, and I almost feel like we're getting sidetracked by this Q argument a little, is that what she can carry on is the processing of his 2009 claim.
Yes, that's
and that correct. Was a claim for an increase, and she can carry on the processing of he got that, but he didn't think the effective date was right, and so he can make any arguments for an earlier effective date that were permitted by that 2009 claim.
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes, he could. The substitute party can continue the claim that's pending. But the Q claim isn't what was pending. There was no Q claim pending at the time of his death. And I believe...
And so even if he hadn't passed... This is... and I'll ask your friend about this too. But if the veteran hadn't died, and if he had appealed the effective date from the 2010 decision relating to the 29 claim for increase... In your view, could he have raised a Q claim in that appeal, or would he have had to file a separate allegation of Q to the board alleging Q in the 1960 decision?
Well, I think he could have. I think it would have followed the same path as what actually happened, which is that he could have raised the allegation of Q, which would have ultimately have been remanded to the RO for decision in the first place, which is what happened in this case, was that they remanded the Q claim to the RO to decide it in the first instance. But if there was an argument of Q for an earlier effective date, Mr. Cruz could have raised that at any time. It didn't have to be within that one-year period, necessarily, following the 2010 decision. But yes, if he had raised it, we wouldn't be here because then she could be continuing to process that claim to completion. But there is no claim pending at the time of his death. And that's where the problem with the language of 5121A comes in. And this court in Russick explained...
I think the question was, could he have brought it in if he had been alive?
Could he have brought it into the board in the first instance?
Yeah.
I think the claim would have to be decided by the RO, which is why the board in this case remanded to the RO the Q claim to decide the Q claim in the first instance. And
so in your view, even if he had raised it, it really wouldn't have been part of appeal of the 2010 decision. It would have been sent back to the RO as a separate Q allegation.
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah, that's... how I understand it, that the RO would have had to decide the Q claim in the first instance. And here, when the RO looked at the Q claim, determined that it had not been pending at the time of his death. I think the appellant's counsel claimed that during that 1 year period after Mr. Cruz died, that his surviving spouse had every right that he had. And I think that that is a statement that's too broad. And it's a statement that's repeated in his reply brief at page 3, that he was able to take any action that Mr. Cruz could have taken if he was alive. And I don't think that's what the statute says. I think that's way too broad a reading of what the language of 5121A says. Mrs. Cruz could not have raised a new claim for a new disability or a new injury. She could not, under the language of the regulation, could not expand the claim, could not add new issues. And you're really limited to processing what it is that's pending at the time of the veteran's death. And here there was no Q claim pending. There was no argument as to the 1960 decision pending. And so we think the Veterans Court was correct to find that that she could not complete that claim.
So what do you mean by pending? Is that an issue that's been litigated or has been briefed, has been put before the court? I am concerned that we don't say that a substitute cannot bring any new claims, and then that effectively shuts out the veteran out of court. And we don't want to do that if there is something pending. So I'm concerned over how we treat the word pending here.
Well, Your Honor, I think that again, because the decision that came out in 2010 was not final at the time that the veteran died, the substituted party could have filed a notice of disagreement as long as it was within that 1 year period of time in order to continue that claim to completion.
So it's a claim that was filed and not final that we look to determine the limits of what was pending.
Yeah, I think you would look to whether the decision, whether there was a final decision. So here, because the 2010 decision was not yet final at the time that he died, that arguably there could be a notice of disagreement filed as to that, as long as it did not contain a new Q claim. We wouldn't be here arguing if it had just been a notice of disagreement.
But the 1960 decision was final,
yes.
And there'd been no attempt to challenge it or reopen it yet. If he'd separately filed or raised an allegation of Q, then that would be pending too.
That's correct.
And then she could have subbed in on that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Anything else?
No. Your Honors, have no further questions. We'd ask the Veterans Court to be affirmed. Thank you.
Mr. Carpenter, you have 3 minutes. We'll restore you to 4.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I believe that the the Department of Justice attorney misspoke or at least didn't correctly state the interpretation that the Secretary has already made of 5121 capital A. And I would refer the Court's attention to 38 CFR 3.1010F2. And at F2, it specifically says, involving the adjudications involving a substitute, that an expansion of a claim is not permitted. And then it says that a substitute may not add an issue or expand the claim. It says, however, a substitute may raise new theories of entitlement in support of the claim. And that's precisely what she did by using the Q procedural device to establish a new theory that the veteran's claim has been pending. One of the things that the board decision said was they made a review and said there was nothing pending. There was no informal claim. There was nothing that was submitted that was left unadjudicated. But that doesn't include, and then they refused to adjudicate, the question of whether or not there was an unlawful reduction. And that was a new theory of why the 100% had been in place from 1961 until the date in which it was finally granted. We are dealing
isn't
here...
Isn't that a new claim?
Sorry, Your Honor?
Why isn't that a new claim?
Because it's not a claim, Your Honor. It can't be a new claim as a matter of law because a Q...
I don't want to get caught up in a debate about this, but it's the 1960 decision was final.
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
And so, absent some kind of challenge to the 1960 decision, you couldn't, you know, reopen it.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right. And when the veteran filed his...
Well, I'm sorry, that's not quite correct, Your Honor, because this was an increase claim. There's no reopening requirement for increase. You can always ask
But if you wanted to say the 1960 reduction, it was a reduction.
It was a reduction.
If you wanted to say that was wrong and it should never have been reduced,
yes,
you would have had to file a claim saying the 1960 decision contained Q.
I don't think that categorical statement is accurate, Your Honor. The veteran could have.
I don't want to get a debate into that. I know you disagree, but hypothetically, I want to get to the questions that I think are pertinent to hear, even if you disagree on that. Mm-hmm. Let's assume that's correct. When he filed his claim in 2009, he wasn't challenging the 1960 decision. He was asking for an increase from the 70% he had to 100 based. Was he submitting new evidence to show the increase?
Well, he had to in order to show that his disability was or should have been at
100%. So the scope of the claim he filed in 2009 was a claim for increase.
Yes, Your Honor.
It wasn't a claim for error in an already final decision.
No, but
why aren't those two separate claims?
Because of 3.110F2, in which the Secretary says a substitute may raise new theories of entitlement to support the claim. The underlying claim is for his entitlement to 100% from 1961 when it was unlawfully reduced to the present.
His underlying claim was a claim for increase from 70 to 100%.
That's correct. And he wanted, if his 100% is restored, then it has been increased. And the question is whether that was or wasn't lawful.
I understand your argument.
Unless there's any further questions from the panel.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, John.
We thank the parties for their arguments.